Welcome back, and as you can see on the screen here, we've got Michael Schultz. Hey, mate, how are you?
Good, mate. Thank you.
Michael and I are going to talk today about...
EQV method, remittance method that we use in living private.
And what does that do?
What it does is it's part of the Bills of Exchange Act. It's following the procedure that it mentions in that to pay your bills. That could be fines, utilities, credit cards, mortgage payments, freaking anything, insurance payments, anything.
All right, very good. All right, Michael, here is a typical demand for payment of registration renewal. It looks much the same when they send you a bill for registration or a fine or anything like that. The letter, as you can see here, is divided into three, one across here and one across here. So the top part looks like a check, doesn't it, Michael?
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's a check. It's a bill of exchange, basically. As you can see, the barcoding on that, it's the bank router number, and it's also the router number for the Reserve Bank. This would be a special deposit. It wouldn't be a usual deposit that you would make like a normal check. It's a special deposit. Within these organisations, especially these large ones that have a high turnover, they would have actually a treasury department or a member, an employee in there that's associated with the treasury department. They would be collecting these bills that have been turned back. This particular sample is registration renewal, but it's very familiar because with penalty notices for traffic offences and things like that, all the same stuff. It's a bill. Doesn't matter what the purpose is. It's a bill of exchange.
All right. So this barcode up here is the one you were referring to. That accesses our CQB trust?
Yeah, through the Reserve Bank accesses that money. Yes.
Okay, very good. Yep. So the amount is $864. So now let's have a look below here. What have you done here? You've defaced all of this paperwork.
Yeah, this is the remittance, and this is in line with the bills of exchange. If your viewers get a copy of the Bill of Exchange Act and refer to Section 5, which states common law, Section 22, 26, 30, and 34, just those five sections, but not limited to, but those five sections, if you read through those, it'll take you about 5 minutes, will give you a full understanding of what this is all about. It also will expose the fraud that's been going on through the banks, insurance companies, and also our government.
Okay. So let's just go and have a quick look at the bills of exchange. We did this in the last video, but let's do it again. It's very interesting. All right. So here we are here. Now, you mentioned 5, application of rules of bankruptcy. Is that the one? And common
law. That's it. And common law. They're not very big sections to read. They're pretty specific and blunt.
So the rules of common law, including the law merchant, save in as so far as they are inconsistent with the express provisions of this act, shall continue to apply to bills of exchange, checks, and promissory notes. In other words, any rules or laws about bills of exchange that were current when the Constitution was activated in 1901 are still there.
That's correct.
And yet these government departments continue to try and deny that.
They're denying and they're willfully ignoring because they're stealing your cash savings when you didn't have to put your hand in your pocket at all to pay these bills.
Interesting to know.
As an example, going back to that registration document, if you go up to the amount due, that is what you're looking at. We all walk around with $10 notes, $5 notes, $20 notes, $50 notes, things like that in our wallet. That's a note, right? It has a fixed dollar amount. This is a note as well. This is a $864.40 note. It's a bill of exchange. It's a bond once you sign it and return it. It's bonded. And this is what they securitize and then sell on into the mutual fund marketplace under your trust name. They make money off this.
What's my trust name?
Your trust name would be where the addressee section is. That is your trust. That is not you. That is your trust.
Okay.
You are only the beneficiary. The trustee is Vic Rhodes. They created this bill. The creator of the bill is the drawer. The drawer is the one who's earmarked from your CESQV trust. $864.40. They have that on hold, right? They're waiting to cash in. The trustee is creating it and sending you this bill. You as the beneficiary is supposed to sign off on it and send it back to them so they can cash it in into their receivables account. Remember, we don't have a currency in this country. It's all digital number from one account to the next, withdrawn from one, then balanced in another, and so on. It's passed on. It's a note being passed on, an IOU sort of thing, a promissory note or whatever. But this is what they term as an express trust contract. It's an offer being made to you, to the beneficiary, to agree to pay it. Because remember, in most cases, a lot of these goods and services have already been received, so they just then send you the bill for acceptance, basically. But you must return these things back to them. Otherwise, you actually break trust law by keeping it. We've been trained to believe we're supposed to keep it as a receipt. No, they've trained us to believe we do, but we're actually in default. So not only are they still chasing that amount from your savings, from your own pocket, but they also now lodge a default towards your trust and they collect the second payment. And it gets worse because this bill is actually paid three times. And that's when you return this and they securitize it, it disappears into the stock exchange where somebody's actually paid again for the value and then trades it onto the market, into the market for profit. So it's been paid three times.
So let's go through this wording again, just so people get it. This bill or slash offer is accepted as money for the dollar amounts shown here. Now, take it back and use as remittance and settle the accounts. Yours honorably, you sign your name.
Under yours honorably would be a printed version of your name, Joe Bloggs, your normal Joe Bloggs, like you've always done it before as the straw man. You don't make it an autograph using colons and things like that. It's just straightforward. The same as it appears on the addressee part of the bill, except just use the lower case.
Okay, so you sign it here, equitable beneficial named estate trust title holder, brackets, not the trustee.
That's correct.
Without prejudice. Now, basically, you don't have to write all of this. You shouldn't have to.
No.
If they knew what they were doing, all you need to do is to endorse the check.
Yeah, you just put a signature on it and send it back.
That's right.
The problem is these organisations are only just starting to receive these remittances back. So we're in the process of receiving pushback from them because they keep saying to us, no, we can only accept credit card. They're actually breaking the law. It's actually antitrust laws. So what we're doing is those that are Spartans are actually working against this. We're actually educating them as we go along. So we have follow-up letters and things like that to use, depending on what they're coming back at. But at the end of the day, you stand by it. Once you've returned it and they've kept it, it's paid.
Yeah.
There's nothing more to discuss. If they don't like it, they need to return that original wet ink signed copy back to you. If they send you a photocopy or they send it to you by email as an attachment, that is not the original bill. The bill can only be done once.
I just want to go over these acts again. Which was the next one?
22.
The acceptance of a bill is the signification, that means your signature, by the drawee of his or her assent to the order of the drawer. Now, the drawer is the
trustee.
And an acceptance is invalid unless it complies with the following conditions, namely, it must be written on the bill. In other words, you must sign the bill.
Yes.
And the mere signature of the drawee without additional words is sufficient. You only need your signature.
Yes, sir.
And B, it must not express that the drawee, that's you, will perform his or her promise.
You're the drawee. You're signing as the drawee.
Okay. So will perform his or her promise by any other means than the payment of money. And that amount of money is shown in the bill that they have sent you.
Yeah.
The next one would be 26.
26.
Delivery. So every contract on a bill, whether it be the drawers, the acceptors, or the and endorsers, is incomplete and revocable until delivery of the instrument in order to give effect thereto. In other words, it must be delivered back to them.
Yeah. Once you do a registered mail and you've posted it with Australia Post under Commonwealth, it's delivered.
Okay. Now, provided that where an acceptance is written on a bill and the drawee gives notice to or according to the directions of the person entitled to the bill that he or she has accepted it, the acceptance then becomes complete and irrevocable.
Yep.
So that's, once you've signed it and given it back to them, it's irrevocable. They cannot refuse it.
Once they receive it back to their office, once they, someone's gone and picked it up from the mailbox, it's as good as signed and delivered and paid.
Now, there's a problem there, isn't there? Because you're finding now that some of these GovCorp people are not actually picking up their registered mail.
They're willfully ignoring their mail. They're leaving registered mail sitting in their PO boxes for weeks because they know exactly what we're doing. So any mail associated to our account must be somehow flagged.
Yeah. All right, let's go on.
And they're using the Commonwealth Postal Service to hide their crime.
Yeah. Number two. As between immediate parties and as regards a remote party other than a holder, in due course, the delivery, A, in order to be effectual, must be made either by or under the authority of the party drawing, accepting or endorsing, as the case may be. B, may be shown to have been conditional or for a special purpose only, that's correct, and not for the purpose of transferring the property in the bill, that's correct. We're doing that by paying the bill that they've sent. But if the bill be in the hands of a holder, in due course, a valid delivery of the bill by all parties prior to him or her, so as to make them liable to him or her, is conclusively presumed. Could you explain that?
Yeah, there's two parts in that one. Basically, the trustee who created the bill and sent the bill, once that bill is returned in their hand, signed by the drawee, by the beneficiary of that trust, it's as good as done. It's presumed. The bill is paid. So any conditions associated with that bill, whatever the demand was on that bill, is given. It is an express contract offer. And when a beneficiary signs it and returns it, it's a two-party agreement contract. That's what a bill of exchange is. It's a contract.
Yep. So number three, where a bill is no longer in the possession of a party who has signed it as a drawer or endorser, a valid and unconditional delivery by him or her is presumed until the contrary is proved. That's why you register it and send it back to them.
Yeah, it's a service delivery. It's proof of service delivery.
Right.
That's why we register postback. You can't argue with the Commonwealth Postal Service.
That's right.
We're not holding it, so we're not in default. We sent it back, and they receive it because we know they receive it because they reply to us and say, oh, we don't accept this method of payment. So that's telling us they got it.
Mike, you can pay the post office to get a signature and then notify you.
Yeah, you can, but it's not really necessary because they notify you because they want to push back and argue that, no, we can't accept that as a method of payment. That's telling you they received it. Remember, it's presumed they received it.
So what's the next one?
That was 2630.
30, procuration signatures, a signature by procuration. Operates as notice that the agent has but a limited authority to sign, and the principal is only bound by such signature if the agent in so signing was acting within the actual limits of his or her authority. So if somebody has a power of attorney, for instance, they can sign on your behalf. Is that correct?
That's right. That's what a beneficiary is.
Yeah.
You're the beneficiary of the trust they built. They didn't bill you. They billed your trust. You're the beneficiary. It was created off a birth certificate. So you have the authority to sign. That's why they're sending it to you. They need your signature as the beneficiary to cash it.
Okay. So the next one now is section 34, holder in due course.
Yeah.
A holder in due course is a holder who has taken a bill, complete and regular on the face of it, under the following conditions, namely, A, that he or she became the holder of it before it was overdue and without notice that it had been previously dishonored. If such was the fact, and B, that he or she took the bill in good faith and for value, and that at the same time the bill was negotiated to him or her as she had no notice of any defect in the title of the person who negotiated it. Please explain.
The bill is to be accepted on face value. Our limit as a beneficiary to sign that is trusting that the trustee is doing the honourable thing and protecting the trust. And whatever they're sending the beneficiary to sign is taken in good faith. And we take it in good faith that their fiduciary duty is lawful.
They have a duty to accept the payment.
Yeah, they have a duty to take it and actually process it. We don't need to tell them to do it. That's why you only need a signature on it and send it back. But unfortunately, they've been screwing us over that much that we have to now educate them more about the processes of the bills that they're actually producing and sending out.
Okay. Number two, in particular, the title of a person who negotiates a bill is defective within the meaning of this act when he or she obtained the bill or the acceptance thereof by fraud, duress, or force and fear, or other unlawful means, or for an illegal consideration, or when he or she negotiates it in breach of faith.
That sounds like a penalty notice, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it's threat enforcement. It's extortion. They're forcing you to pay a bill. They're threatening you on the bill to pay it. We don't have to. This is the point. The Bill of Rights, 1688, Section 12 says, all fines and forfeitures are null and void prior to a conviction. So we don't need to pay it. But they force us to, and they drag us through their court system, which is also an unconstitutional act. They're blatantly robbing us, and we're letting them by consent. We're saying, yeah, you can do it. Yeah, I'll pay, just because we live in fear. You don't need to live in fear. The law's on your side.
Unfortunately, but the guns are on their side.
That's the guns, yeah. Again, if we really want to talk about gun control, that's not royal assent. Gun control is not law.
Excuse us for a moment while we pause to view an advert from one of our sponsors. They help to keep these podcasts going. We'll be right back.
Dick Yardley's book, Australian Political and Religious Leaders, Treason, Treachery and Sabotage. Dick exposes how Whitlam, Hawke, Keating, Goss, Rudd and all the other Fabians have destroyed our manufacturing and agriculture. If you want to know exactly how they have done it, get Dick's book at advanceaustralia.com.au and click on merchandise. Knowledge is power. Get the power to fight the corruption today.
All right, let's go back here.
No, that's it. The rest of it, you can read in your own time. It's the main five that I referenced to. And that's what I tell the other side when they receive the bill and they push back saying we can't accept it as a method of payment. So I refer to those five sections saying, find 5 minutes and actually read these sections and remind them they too don't have to pay bills. What I'm showing them is law. It's imperial law. And I'm telling them, you don't have to pay bills either. What I'm showing you, you can practice yourself. And that gets the other side starting to think and start to wake up themselves a little bit and say, if he doesn't have to pay my bills, why should I have to? Yeah. If the law says I don't have to and this is how you pay them, I should be doing them too. We would all be richer for it. And in actual fact, by paying your bills this way reduces the deficit.
Exactly.
Because you're not borrowing money. Yeah. You're actually paying it off.
Yeah.
The nation's deficit is going backwards. It's going towards the positive.
Good. Okay. Where do we go from here then, Mike?
We all need to start doing this remittance on every bill they get, whether it be electricity, water, rates, phone bill, anything, because under commercial law, you're not allowed to have a monopoly, right? So what this government corporate has done is set up shop fronts. They put in place legislation and acts where they can create these shop fronts like Telstra's and the Optus and all these gas companies and all these electricity companies. They're all shop fronts because they're all governed by the corporate government legislation. So they're not independent and there is no competition. It's the same with the four banks. They're not competitioning to each other. They're all shop fronts. They're all ruled, operated and governed by a government. So they have a monopoly. The government is a monopoly in commerce, and that is against the law because there must be competition.
And the government, being a corporation, is governed by corporate rules too.
They're all corporations, that's right. There's not one Commonwealth entity. They're all non-Commonwealth entities.
Yeah.
So they're not even our government.
Now, if you look here, you can see we've got across the top here menu. If you go to resources, document library, and remember we promised this to you in the last video, here it is, live in private, and then come down here to CQV claim. These are the documents that you need, your stat deck blank. Now, Michael, I'm going to get you to help me to fill out my stat deck, okay?
Okay.
And we'll show people how that works. Now, let's say that we've sent back the remittance to the fine processing company, whoever they are. In Queensland, they're called Spur, and they've come back and said, oh, we don't accept that. you need to go to court. And I've got a form for that. Can you explain how this all works, please?
It's the CQV remittance method, which we've been doing in Living Private. It starts with your original penalty notice. When you receive a penalty notice, you write the remittance on it like we showed in the previous video. And we have the file in the library as well for you to copy and a sample there as well. So you would fill out that penalty notice, the first one, as a bill of exchange remittance. You would copy that, of course, for your own records. It's a receipt that you've proof of payment.
I forgot. What do I do now? Do I ask them for a receipt?
No, you can't.
I didn't do it, so I don't have any proof.
It doesn't matter anyway. Even if you have missed that step, it's the second penalty notice you're waiting for, the reminder penalty notice. You'll notice the difference between the first one. Is that the original or is that?
No, that's the second one that I've
got. That's the second one. Is it a reminder? Does it say reminder?
No, it's a notice of intention to suspend driver license.
That's your crime. That's the threat, right? Yeah. That's the threat, okay? That's extortion. 28 days later, after the first notice, you'll receive a reminder or a duplication of the notice. And it usually has language in it that's actually quite disgusting. It will have threats made in it that they'll cancel your license or do something. They're going to charge you extra dollars if you don't pay now, that sort of thing. That's extortion. And no government department other than a court has judicial powers. And these state revenue officers all believe in their own minds that they can act judicially, and they can't. Remember the Bill of Rights?
Yeah.
It says all fines and forfeitures are null and void prior to a conviction. Yeah. And it's always in red too. They actually highlight that in red, so it's easy to see, oh, you're threatening and forcing me. So that's extortion.
Then they go on, it is illegal for you to drive without a license. If you don't pay, we'll take additional enforcement action, which could include taking your car, taking your property, or garnishing from your wages.
Yeah.
Where do they get the authority to do that?
They have none. And this is all fear-mongering. They know they don't, but they do this anyway because they got the masses believing that they do have the authority to do that, and they don't have any. Under trespass laws, it's actually demanding money with menace, which is a serious crime. There's jail time for it. In Living Private, we've already been doing it. We've been taking police and judges to court. We've been suing them using tort suits, man against man lawsuits.
All right. Why do I have to fill out a stat deck now?
Okay. The second one is your crime scene. That is your evidence. It's their document they give you to use against them because it's their crime scene. So what you do now is you can either reply to it and just play with them a little longer until you get the third one. The third one's a beauty. It really is. It's like an ultimatum. It's a, if you don't pay now, we will take you to court. What you do after the second one is you now nominate or elect to go to court over. They've threatened you. They've committed a crime. It's an illegal adjudication. They can't do that.
Well, after I got the threat of suspending my license, and it arrived 7 days after their date, so I had been driving around for 7 days without a license unknowingly.
Yeah.
So they don't even give you enough time to get it.
They do purposely do things so that you actually fall into their criminal category.
Yeah.
So they don't do anything because they're sincere or honourable. It's all by design. It's like when they send you a letter and they date it today's date. That letter doesn't go in the post for at least 3 days. So by the time you get it, the deadline of 3 days, 72 hours is gone. Cool. They do this all on purpose. It's the same when you reply to them and you send something to them in the post, registered mail. It's sitting in their PO box for 3 weeks. They're totally ignoring it.
Yeah. Why am I going to fill this out?
What it does is to nominate the driver today. The fine's been addressed to the trust. They're not fining you. And people must understand they're billing the trust. They're accusing the trust. The presumption is the trust was driving. We all know a fiction can't drive. It has to be a man or a woman. So what we're doing is we're changing the name when a company's vehicle's been booked or fined. And instead of the company paying the bill, they have to nominate who the driver was. And it could have been an employee. So it's the employee's responsibility to pay the fine that he created, not the company itself.
All right.
So it's the same scenario. What you're doing is you're changing from the trust name and you're nominating the man or woman as the driver, which is the living man or woman. But now, they can't deal with living men and women. But there's a bit more information we add on it, and we also alter the document so they understand fully where we're coming from. You do this step because you're electing to go to court. You need to take it to court because they've made it a crime, which is not a crime, because we all know the definition of what a crime is. So there is no crime committed, but they're saying it's a criminal act with statutory penalties. That's an oxymoron. That's like saying sovereign citizen. It's the same as bullshit. Yeah, you drove, but you're the man who drove. You're not the fiction. Remember, they build the fiction. So for them to get their facts right, they must change the fine from fiction ID and they must make it the man ID. Now, we know they can't deal with living men. So there's no court, there's no case to be heard because it was a living natural man driving the car, not the fiction. They can only deal with the fiction. So they have to get their own paperwork corrected first before they can make any substantial claim. So we're nominating the driver today. And what we're doing is we do it in red pen, as living men can only do in blood, write in blood. So we write up here where the blank spot is, offences against the Commonwealth. We quote the Crimes Act 1914, Section 75, the Crimes Act 1958, Section 316, and the Interpretation Act 1984, Section 76A. They're all relevant. It's very easy to Google those to read them yourself.
Is this the Interpretation Act or is the Acts Interpretation Act?
Oh, it's Acts Interpretation Act. If you do a Google, it comes up either way. So in the statute declaration, you're stating there, I, and you're using the lowercase, you're using the house of surname, and in brackets there, the equitable beneficial name to state trust. You see how the CQV trust comes into play? You're matching it all from the original remittance. You're consistent, but everything they've done is one crime after the next. So they're not very honourable, are they? Just from their own paperwork. And then of is your trust, who it was billed to. So the corporation name is your trust name, isn't it?
So that would be in capital, all caps?
That would be all capitals. As written on the bill itself, that is your trust details. That's not you. Oh. Then you got of secured party, and that's your trust address.
Right.
So secured party.
Why square brackets?
Postcode is a military zone, and living people don't live on military bases. So we put that in brackets. So it's totally isolated from there. In fact, you could actually leave the postcode off. But because they asked for it, we just put it there in brackets.
Okay. All right. Then do solemnly and sincerely declare that, in this case, we've taken this out on the actual template, but
yeah,
see here a sample.
Yeah.
The person in charge of vehicle registration number so-so was... And again, you use your autograph name here. Leave all of this blank.
Yeah.
What about the born date?
Yeah, you correct it. Instead of date of birth, put date born.
Okay.
The license number and state of issue, if known, just leave it blank.
Yeah.
Because it's got nothing to do with the living man. It's not our license. So don't match it with your living man name.
Okay.
Particulars of a person, that's care of.
Yeah.
We don't use secured party. This is care of.
So we don't need all of this stuff here about the vehicle was stolen?
No, that's got nothing to do with the fines. It's just if you had another purpose for changing the name.
So the Queensland Police Service statute report number is?
Yeah.
Bill of Rights 1688. That's what you put here?
Yeah. It's a nice little reminder. You still put the report number in there. That would be your infringement notice number. You put it there on the line. But above it, you put in there Bill of Rights, 1688, Section 12. That just reminds them all fines and forfeitures are null and void prior to a conviction. So you're telling them what they should already know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you put under there where it says in red, so a bit of a threat, you know, a bit of an enforcement there. And I make this solemn declaration. Notice how it's in red? Because you, as a living man, can only be seen in red. So they actually make that part for you in red. That's why it's in red, because they know they need the living man to bring the dead alive. Understand?
Yep.
So what we do is we just a little correction there. No man or woman victim claimant. Bill of Rights, 1688, Section 12, and no man or woman victim claimant. So we're telling them, unless there's a victim, there's no claim here. There's no crime being committed, so there can't be a fine. And then they put in a box, and it's all highlighted in a box. So it's totally separate from the rest of the whole document when it's in its own box. And that's holding you to account there under there in black is under their statute or jurisdiction. That's why it's like that. So right. I put in red there, so is demanding money with menace.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little reminder.
All right. I would put in here rather than so is, it is also a criminal offence to demand money with menaces.
Yeah, they know this. They understand every word you're putting on here. Don't worry.
Yeah.
They understand this stuff.
All right.
And then when you signature the declarant, you put the by and the colon and in your long hand like you would with a signature. Yeah. Your signature is your straw man. So don't use your signature, straw man signature in this thing. You are the living man. So use your common law signature, which is
your autograph.
First, middle, colon, surname. Yeah, autograph. That's how, your autograph in longhand. Yeah.
I have a red seal that I can put there too.
Yeah, if you have a seal, use it, whatever. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. What should happen after this is that you get a nice letter sending back to you saying that the fine's been cancelled and there is no court.
Okay. Now, this is for the JP here.
Yes.
So they can sign using any colour ink, but it's a good idea to take a red pen for them.
No, a JP is their corporate officer, their state officer.
Right.
They have the same rank as a magistrate in the court. Okay. So they are part of the corporation system, of the Admiralty Law or UCC, whatever you want to call it. So if they use black, that's great because that says on paper here that okay. their dead fiction as a JP recognises you as the living man.
Okay, very good. The rest of the form there is irrelevant for us.
Yeah. There is no forgiveness in what they're doing because they know they're breaching the law. Their own very laws they hold us to, for some reason, they're not bound by them.
And so, it's the same thing with the court system. I was told by a Supreme Court judge here in Brisbane that the people in the CDP and the AFP down in Melbourne and the court people down in Melbourne who are trying to drag me into court down there, they are all immune to prosecution. They're not. They come under Clause 5 of the Constitution, which states every judge, magistrate and member of the Commonwealth is bound to the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act 1901. We are all bound to that Constitution and the laws that append to it.
And to back that up is the Crimes Act 1914.
Yeah.
That act was created for you and me, normal men and women, Commonwealth subjects or Commonwealth nationals, whatever you want to call yourself. That act we can use against them to sue them. The Judicial Act of 1903, Section 67A says you can sue a judge because Section 80 says must be common law in court, and they never have it. So they've already breached their own judicial act. Then you've got the Crimes Act 1958, Section 316, that references unlawful oaths. I hold you to your oath because you know it's not a constitutional oath they swore to. So they are already now in misprision of treason and God knows what else they've been involved in. Anyone who is pretending to be something they're not and they're in a position of power that actually does affect the livelihood or the freedoms or the rights of every man and woman. That is, in my book, treason. Whether they like it or not, that's treason. They're paid by a foreign entity. They're governed to do what a foreign entity is telling them to do, and they are willfully ignoring their responsibilities and their conduct and ethics to practice what's lawfully constitutional. And they're not following the Constitution and the guidelines of the Constitution. They're not our people. So they have no authority or no power to force anything upon us. At the end of the day, you can demand proof of their oath, and if they can't deliver it, then it's not a court. You don't need to be in there, and they can't do a damn thing about it. But having said all that, again, the Crimes Act 1914, Section 13, you cite Section 13 as your identity in that court, and then you go straight to Section 8, and that is a civil arrest with no warrant required. You can arrest everybody in that judiciary if it's not a constitutional court.
Okay, very good. Anyway, Michael, thank you very much. And I've already put the documents up there on the website. If you want these documents as templates, just go here to commonlaw.earth, come here to resources, document library, and then back down here to live in private. And there you will see CQB claim. All the documents are in here and everything is ready for you to go. You just download it, click on the download button. There it is there.
Just as a disclaimer, this is not legal advice.
No, but it's fun.
It's fun. It's educational, that's for sure. But when you do receive a fine, you only have two choices, and that is you either fight the fine or you pay it. And if you decide to fight the fine, we've shown you one way of doing it, but you have to stand by it and follow it through because you could cause more harm or more cost to yourself if you go half-hearted into it. So just be aware of that. Think about that before you make that decision to follow that process. Because at the end of the day, if you don't pay the fine, you will be summoned to court. They will summon you to court, whether you choose to go first, voluntary, or you wait to the very end after the third notice with all the threats and harm they're going to give you. You will end up going to court and you have to prepare yourself mentally with knowledge of how to fight back. But at the end of the day, if you've done a remittance, it's paid. You just present your second notice and illegal adjudication's already been done. The bill's been paid. You don't understand why you, the beneficiary, have to attend another court for double jeopardy.
All right. Now, Michael, thank you very much for that. Very useful knowledge as always. And thank you, Australia. Talk to you again soon.
Peak Dawn is proud to announce the launch of a series of online learning courses that have been developed in collaboration with common law expert Mike Holt. So if you want to learn about how to protect your rights, what common law is, or indeed the depth of common law courts and how you can use them in your local community to seek justice.
Look for the advertising on commonlaw.earth or commonlaw.education.